Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. It's Friday, April 27th, 2012. I sincerely hope you were with me last week. I'd be devastated to learn that you missed the two Melanies. Melanie Schnoll-Begun from Morgan Stanley. We talked about how to look good when you're recruiting board members. And doyen of the day, Melanie West from the Wall Street Journal, writes the Donor of the Day column. She and I talked about how to pitch her to get your donors covered in that column. This week, it's Get Monthly Givers. Bob Wesolowski, president of Caring Habits, helps you get habitual monthly donors through electronic funds transfer. You may know that as EFT. Who are the best prospects and how do you ask them? How do you upgrade donors and when should you say thank you? That was pre-recorded at Philanthropy Day 2011, hosted by the Westchester County chapter of AFP. Also today, strategic organizations raise more money. Starita Ansari is president and chief change officer at MSB Philanthropy Advisors. She wants you to organize thoughtfully around your mission, looking strategically at your inputs, outputs, and outcomes to boost your fundraising revenue. That's also pre-recorded at Philanthropy Day last year. On Tony's Take Two Between the Guests, I don't know what's going to be on my blog this week because I'm recording in early April, but I will look back at a few recent posts. You can use the hashtag NonprofitRadio to join the conversation with us on Twitter. Right now, we take a break, and when we come back, get monthly givers. Stay with me.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Is your marriage in trouble? Are you considering divorce? Hello, I'm Lawrence Bloom, a family law attorney in New York and New Jersey. No one is happier than the day their divorce is final. My firm can help you. We take the nasty out of the divorce process and make people happy. Please call us at 212-964-3502 for a free consultation. That's Lawrence H. Bloom at 212-964-3502. We make people happy.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com. Talking
Alternative. Welcome back to Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95% on Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Now I have a pre-recorded interview, Get Monthly Givers, and here is that. Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of National Philanthropy Day, hosted by the Association of Fundraising Professionals, Westchester County Chapter. We're at the Edith Macy Conference Center in Briarcliff Manor, New York. I'm with Bob Wesolowski. He's the founder and president of Caring Habits, which is dedicated to building and operating monthly giving programs with electronic funds transfers. And Bob's conference topic is techniques in monthly giving. Bob Wesolowski, welcome.
Thank you very much.
What do nonprofits need to know about, just generally, before we get into details, about monthly giving? What are they not doing that they ought to be doing, perhaps?
Well, I think the big secret for this group is that many organizations have heard about monthly giving programs. Goodness knows they've been around since the early 1980s. Mm-hmm. But many organizations have stayed away, either because they think they need to be larger or because they think they need to have more technology to do it successfully. And that's just not the case.
Okay. So what can the smaller organization do to encourage monthly gifts?
Well, I think there are two groups within the smaller not-for-profits.
Okay.
I think in every case, all organizations have a core group of constituents. They essentially make a contribution every time you ask. They may be donors, they may be board members, they may be folks who are somewhere in between. And so the first thing that we'll do is help the client identify who those particularly loyal donors are and work with them first.
Okay, so loyalty is where you want to start in developing your prospect pool.
That's right.
For monthly giving?
That's right. I think we live in a world of finite resources. In a perfect world, you could send solicitations to all of your donors all of the time. But with finite resources, you have to pick and choose your battles.
All right, and when we're looking at loyalty, which I'm sure is determined by the consistency of the giving.
That's correct.
Over many years. Is that right?
Not necessarily. I think typically when you start to look at a group that says, where should we go, one of the things that we'll look at is data over the last 12 to 18 months. And we'll help to identify those donors who have made perhaps two or three contributions over the last 12 to 18 months. And that's generally a pretty good starting point.
All right. And are we interested in the size of those contributions? Or could it be very small and still qualify as a prospect?
This process is geared more towards lower donors, donors whose annual giving might be at a minimum $25 to $50 and certainly no more than $500. And the reason we put a limit on $500 is that in many cases, once you get into that kind of atmosphere, those donors are more important, they feel more important, they need to be stroked a little bit more, and in general, they don't like the anonymity that goes with a monthly giving program.
All right. Are we interested in age? Is that important in developing our prospect pool?
The only
assuming a nonprofit has the, well, I know, realize a lot don't, but assuming they do have age.
Age is an important consideration, age and demographics. It is important when you consider whether you'll offer the donor a recurring credit card contribution or a recurring funds transfer contribution.
Oh, okay.
But the key factor is loyalty to the organization. Once you've got that loyalty, then they're a candidate. Once you start to look at the demographics, then you'll have an idea as to whether you want to offer your donors credit card or funds transfer or both.
Okay. And maybe we'll talk about how to segment in a few moments. All right. So we've developed our prospect pool. We know we don't have to be a large organization. We don't have to have special technology and sophisticated technology. What do we do now? We have our prospect pool identified.
We have found that most organizations get involved with this through a direct mail campaign. There are certainly larger ones that do telemarketing, but direct mail is generally the best way to start with this. And it's a simple ask, the kind of thing that these folks do all the time. Now, there are some clients who may do three or five or four direct mail appeals per year. There are others who do 11 or 12. If the group is doing fewer solicitations per year, let's say three or four, we're certainly not going to suggest that they devote one entire appeal to monthly giving.
Okay.
What we would suggest is that this is included as an option. On the other hand, if a group is doing 10 or 11 or even 12 direct mail solicitations in a year, there are so many going out that in that case, it's generally far easier to dedicate one of those solicitations to a direct mail campaign.
All right, and if it's not a dedicated direct mail piece about monthly giving, can it be as simple as a PS?
Yes, it can.
In a letter? So how would we word that a little bit?
Well, I think what happens is that, and it's kind of interesting, if you go back and look at the PBS and the NPR market in contrast, goodness knows they've been doing this for the better part of 20 or 30 years. And I think where a lot of those organizations tend to fall down is that they look at the program in terms of the benefits to the donor. It's easy to do, no checks to write, no stamps to buy, no trips to the post office. In fact, they are particularly poor reasons to contribute to an organization. All giving is mission-based. And so the first place to start in that solicitation is, if you become a monthly giver, you help us lower our administrative expenses. If you become a monthly giver, you give us income that we can rely on month to month.
All right. So this kind of fundraising is no different than any other fundraising. We don't rely on the ease of giving when we're saying, send us a check, you know, or the ease of giving in other ways. I mean, it's mission driven.
It's all mission
driven. Love of the organization. And by the way, here's an option that happens to be easy.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we can do this in a PS. We could say your gift could be a recurring gift. Would you then include a form for people to fill out, or is it better to drive them to a website to have them sign up there for monthly giving, or what's the best?
You certainly want to include the form, because donors tend to respond to the media in which you contact them. If you give them direct mail, they're going to respond to direct mail. If you contact them with an email blast, they'll respond on the web.
Okay.
So you certainly want to do that. It's also important, too, because over the years, the banks have been particularly effective in convincing donors and organizations about how wonderful credit cards. In fact, we have seen changes so that there are different requirements to enroll a donor with funds transfer as opposed to credit cards. That is to say, if somebody wants a recurring gift with a funds transfer, that is out of their checking account or savings account, there needs to be a signed authorization in place. For credit card, you can simply click through, yes, this is what I'd like to do, and it's over and done with.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
Hi, this is psychic medium Betsy Cohen, host of the show The Power of Intuition. Join me at talkingalternative.com Mondays at 11 a.m. Call in for a free psychic reading. Learn how to tune into your intuition to feel better and to create your optimum life. I'm here to guide you and to assist you in creating the life that you deserve. Listen every Monday at 11 a.m. on talkingalternative.com.
Are you feeling overwhelmed in the current chaos of our changing times? A deeper understanding of authentic astrology can uncover solutions in every area of life. After all, metaphysics is just quantum physics, poetically expressed. I am Montgomery Taylor, and I offer lectures, seminars, and private consultations. For more information, contact me at Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at rljmedia.com.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Hi, I'm Kate Pala, Executive Director of Dance New Amsterdam, and you're listening to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%.
Let's go back to something you mentioned earlier about age being a factor in whether you're asking someone to do the credit card or the electronic funds transfer from a checking account. How do those two break down across ages?
In general, what we have found is that donors who are younger, better educated, more affluent, more disposable income prefer electronic giving, that is to say credit cards. Donors who are older, less well-off, clearly go for funds transfers. And so, for example, if I would look at a typical Catholic client where the age of a donor population might be average about 72, 73 years old, I wouldn't be surprised if 70% of the donors gave with funds transfer as opposed to credit cards. On the other hand, if I was to look at an organization like Union of Concerned Scientists or some of the other groups, you might expect to see a 50-50 split, or you might even see a 60-40 or 70-30 split in favor of credit cards.
And is that just because the older population is less comfortable revealing credit card information?
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, and in fact, an interesting side note, we work with a church, congregational church up in Connecticut, mm-hmm. and one of the things they found is that the 5 o'clock service every day, every Sunday, was the one that was most crowded. They would have a couple of hundred people in there. That was the one with the younger folks, and they were all in their 30s. They all had the 3-year-old, 4-year-old, 5-year-olds. When it came time to pass the plate around, even though that's where most of the parishioners were, those collections were the lowest. Everybody had debit and credit cards. When we introduced a monthly giving program for them, contributions went way up.
Where do you find, roughly, the age demarcation line between willingness to do it by credit card or preferring the electronic funds transferred by checking account? Roughly, where does that age break down?
Somewhere in the 50s.
Okay. All right, so we were talking about the marketing, or really the solicitation of this. Direct mail is your preferred method. Can this be successful by through an email solicitation, or
it certainly can. And in fact, one of the things that I'm going to talk about in my presentation today at the conference is that there are any number of organizations out there who have online giving capabilities, and somewhere along the way, someone suggested that they include a monthly giving option in there. Some of these groups would argue that because they allow monthly contributions, they have a monthly giving program. I would differ with that, because in many cases, yeah, you have monthly donors out there, but it's not really a program. Groups don't know what to do with them. They don't know how to solicit them. They don't know how to upgrade. They don't know how to include them in their program. So they're just starting to feel their way through.
I'm with Bob Wesolowski. He's founder and president of Caring Habits. We're talking about monthly giving. And I want to tie this into something that I saw Bob doing earlier here on the exhibit floor. Bob was fly tying. And he's a fly fisherman, and he's going out on Sunday. We're talking on a Wednesday. And Bob, your comment was that if you do your own fly tying, you'll pay more attention to what the fish are after.
That's exactly right.
Okay, and I see an analogy in fundraising. I think if you're writing some of your own appeals, you'll think more about what your donors and prospects are interested in hearing.
That's true. I think you have to know your donors a lot better if you're going to be writing the copy yourself.
Okay, so we're fly fishing for monthly giving donors.
We are.
Okay,
we're looking for the players out there.
And I'll confess that when I saw Bob on the exhibit floor doing the fly tying, I thought he was making jewelry. I thought he was a jewelry maker because he had these precise little tools and a light and a little vise holding the piece he was working on. I thought you were making earrings. But no.
Not this time.
That's how much of a sportsman I am. Right. My head is somewhere in a jewelry store. Let's see. So then we now have our donors. How do we thank monthly donors? Do we thank them every month? Is that annoying? How do we go about stewarding these donors that we now have?
We have seen a distinction between our religious clients and non-religious groups in terms of how they thank donors. I think by and large, if you look at the religious organizations that we work with, and that's roughly 50% of our clients, they feel compelled to send a written acknowledgement every month. even though these charges will appear on the donor's credit card statement or bank statement. Mm-hmm. These groups have been doing these handwritten acknowledgments or some kind of acknowledgments for decades, and it's very difficult for them to get away from it. On the other hand, when we look at the non-religious groups, I think there's an implicit understanding by the donors that this is recurring. They do not want to get thanked every month. And so as long as they see that acknowledgement on their credit card statement each month, that's fine. I think the other thing that also happens for some of the larger religious groups is they may start out on that path of giving monthly acknowledgments. And in some cases, it may take a year, 2 years, 4 or 5 years in some cases, where they finally get enough negative feedback from the donors who say, enough already. We know it's going to happen every month. Save your time. Save your effort. Don't bother with this stuff. We know it's going to happen.
Well, what about an annual thank you letter? Something
absolutely.
Like that, right?
Annual is absolutely very important.
Okay.
Very important.
I think you don't want to be the organization that cultivates and solicits and obtains a monthly giving donor and then forgets ever to say thank you. And just, I know the gift is going to come, so why do I have to say thank you once a year?
Yeah, I think what's really important about it is that once you get a donor who becomes a monthly donor, I think it enables you to change the nature of the relationship. If you look at a group that's doing 4 or 5 direct mail solicitations each year, every solicitation is give me, give me, give me. It's a constant ask. Once you have that monthly donor, you know that they're going to be there for years in most cases, and so you don't need that constant ask. You can begin to provide more programmatic information and begin that upgrade process.
Okay. Oh, so that's important too. So if someone starts at $10 or $15 or $20 a month, over time, you'd like to be able to upgrade them to, I guess, $25 or $50 a month.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And when is the right time to start that conversation? After they've initially committed to the monthly donation, monthly gift, when is the right time to talk to them about the possibility of upgrading?
In our opinion, that needs to be either on their anniversary or a program anniversary. And let me provide an example.
Okay, thanks.
You know, if you're going to be sending these things out, let's use the example again of 4 or 5 direct mail solicitations in a year. You don't want to be, as a fundraiser, you don't want to be in the position of having all of these anniversaries coming up throughout the year. So typically what a client will do is group everybody in and say, June 1, March 1, that's going to be our anniversary date. So everybody who is in the program as of that date, that's their anniversary program. And later on today, I'm going to be doing this presentation with a client, Pat Chambers Daly, who's with the Dominican Sisters in Amityville, Long Island. Mm-hmm. And the way they set up their program, they do the solicitations every March. All right, donors tend to enroll somewhere between March and by the end of May or June, they'll get a group in there. And let's say we're in March 2011. March 2012 will be their first year anniversary because they consider March to be their anniversary month.
Right.
And then on their 2 year anniversary, March of 2013, everybody in the program gets an upgrade. And so they'll figure that 2 years into the program, the donor's comfortable with what they've seen, they're in the fold, and now you can begin that upgrade process.
Okay, and how much is it appropriate to ask them to upgrade to, or do you give options? How does that work?
Groups do it in different ways, but if you're a small local not-for-profit, it's not uncommon to ask for a 10% or a flat 20% upgrade. When Pat started her program 9 years ago, it was simple. We'd like everybody to upgrade 20%.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is it appropriate to ask the donor to decide how much they'd like to upgrade, or is it better to give them a target to shoot for?
It depends on the resources available. There are a lot of clients out there, smaller organizations, that just don't have the resources to laser in specific giving amounts.
Yeah. Okay. So from a direct mail perspective,
from a direct
that gets expensive.
That's right. Yeah. So if they've got the capability to do that, then certainly they will laser in the giving amounts. If it's a smaller organization, then they'll simply go in with that percentage amount, 20%
okay.
or 10%.
Okay. How do we handle the fees? There are going to be fees that the charity is going to be paying mm-hmm. on these credit card transactions. How do we handle that with respect to the crediting of the donor? Do they get credited for the net or just the gross gift?
As an analogy, let's take a check deposit. If a donor writes a check to a not-for-profit, the not-for-profit does not deduct any banking fees associated with that. They credit the donor for the full amount. And the same is true for monthly giving programs.
Okay.
If I give $10, I get credit for $10.
And you'll get credit for $120 for the year.
That's exactly right. And any banking costs is simply their cost of doing business.
Okay. All right. What else should I be asking you that, or what else would you like to convey about annual giving?
Monthly giving. One of the things which is also very, very important about this is that assuming the client is brave enough to go out with these upgrades, and I say brave enough because often what clients will find is that the average upgrade amount going from a one-time donor to a monthly donor, the average upgrade amount that we've seen over the last 20-some years is about an 85% upgrade. So a lot of times a not-for-profit will look at that and say, oh, my goodness, look at Tony. That's more money than we ever thought we would ever get from that guy.
Yes.
So when it comes time to upgrade, they say, how is it possible that he could give more? And so there's an awful lot of reluctance. Once we get the client over that hump, there are two parts to that successful upgrade. The first is to ask, but the second part is a soft ask, which says, I'm sorry, I can't upgrade my monthly contribution at this point, but I'd like to make a one-time contribution. Typically, clients find that when the donor makes that one-time contribution, it is as large or larger than what the upgrade amount would have been. They back off from that simply because there's a bit of reluctance to make that long-term commitment at that point, but they still want to make the contribution to the organization.
Yeah, so it's important to give that option.
Absolutely. And in fact, one of the things that Pat's going to talk about today, when she finally started providing donors with that soft ask, the one-time contribution on there, she has found that in every year that she's done that, and that's been 8 years in a row, there have been sufficiently large contributions that they have paid on their own for that appeal.
Hmm. Okay, excellent. What concerns you, Bob, about annual giving, monthly giving, I'm sorry, monthly giving, that we haven't talked about? Maybe looking into the future, what concerns do you have for nonprofits that are doing this or thinking about doing this?
Particularly for smaller organizations, one of the real concerns that we see is credit card security and credit card safety.
Oh, excellent, yeah.
Over the last 7 or 8 years, the credit card companies, starting with Visa and MasterCard, and including Amex and Discover, have put in place a set of security standards, PCI, the payment card security standards, which govern everyone who touches a credit card, processors like CHI, not-for-profits, software manufacturers, hardware manufacturers, and everybody who touches a credit card has to live by these standards.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we find, particularly among the smaller groups, is a rather cavalier concern about credit card security. They'll get the credit cards in, they'll process them. They may not keep them in a locked or secure area.
So now we have a credit card number. We have its expiration date.
Maybe
we have the secure code on the back.
That's exactly
right. That three-digit code. All right, so now these pieces of paper, let's say hopefully they're on some kind of standard form, but now what are we going to do with these forms? What are people doing and what should they be doing?
Well, what they should be doing and what we counsel is to keep those forms for about 60 days because that will give everyone involved an opportunity to process the contribution and let the donor see it on their statement. So that's one part.
Okay, but and just mentioning that now, we're keeping it for 60 days, keeping it secure
in
somewhere.
In a locked facility.
Right? They should be locked,
absolutely.
Not out on someone's desk or in an inbox, right?
That's exactly right. What some clients are also doing is doing a two-part form for their needs where they will have the name and address and the amount of the contribution on the top of the form, and on the bottom they'll put the credit card number and the expiration date. And after it's processed, they'll cut off that bottom portion of it and do a confetti cut through a shredder on the sensitive information.
Yes. And even I like to really get into detail, a confetti cut, not a quarter-inch strip cut.
That is correct.
That people could piece together in 5 minutes of will. Okay, we have just about a half a minute left. What else did you want to say about the security issue?
The other part is that under no circumstances should any credit card information ever be entered onto a PC, an Excel spreadsheet, a database, because when machines get old, they get tossed in the trash, and who knows what happens to those hard drives.
Bob Wasilowski is founder and president of Caring Habits, which is dedicated to building and operating monthly giving programs with electronic funds transfers. And we also know that he's a sport fisherman and expert fly tyer. Bob Wasilowski, thank you very much for being a guest.
Thank you for having me.
This has been Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of National Philanthropy Day, hosted by the Association of Fundraising Professionals, Westchester County Chapter.
My thanks to Bob Wasilowski for that interview. Right now we take a break, and when we return, Tony's take two.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
Hi, this is psychic medium Betsy Cohen, host of the show The Power of Intuition. Join me at TalkingAlternative.com Mondays at 11 a.m. Call in for a free psychic reading. Learn how to tune into your intuition to feel better and to create your optimum life. I'm here to guide you and to assist you in creating the life that you deserve. Listen every Monday at 11 a.m. on TalkingAlternative.com.
Are you feeling overwhelmed in the current chaos of our changing times? A deeper understanding of authentic astrology can uncover solutions in every area of life. After all, metaphysics is just quantum physics, poetically expressed. I am Montgomery Taylor, and I offer lectures, seminars, and private consultations. For more information, contact me at Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at rljmedia.com.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back. It's time for Tony's Take Two at roughly 32 minutes into the hour. I don't know what's going to be on my blog this week because I'm recording this show a couple weeks early, in early April. So here's a romp through some recent posts, two of them. Our IRS is helping you was on my blog. IRS has some good education courses and webinars on their site, which is called IRS Stay Exempt. And one of those courses is applying for tax exemption. That's something that we get a lot of questions about. How do I create a charity? What's the first step and what's the second step? And applying for tax exemption is one of the IRS's 17-minute web courses, a short lesson on getting your 501c3 designation so that you're exempt from federal income tax and donations that people make to you can earn an income tax charitable deduction. Another one of their courses on their site is unrelated business income. And I've also talked about that here with Gene Takagi and Emily Chan, our regular legal contributors. Again, the IRS site is called IRS Stay Exempt, and there are links to all this on my blog, which is tonymartinetti.com. Another post from February was Respect Small Donors. I used the example of the New Jersey Institute of Technology that got a $5 million gift from a couple that had given just $25 a year, and they had been doing that for about 30 years. And NJIT was very smart to always thank them and developed a relationship with them. And there turned out to be a $5 million gift in the estate of the survivor and that couple. So a very good tale about respecting small donors. Both of those posts are, as I said, on my blog at tonymartinetti.com. And that is Tony's Take Two for Friday, February 27th, the 17th show of the year. Now I have a pre-recorded interview with Starita Ansari from the same conference as the previous interview. And here is my interview with her on strategic organizations.
Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of National Philanthropy Day, where hosts are the Association of Fundraising Professionals Westchester County Chapter. We're at the Edith Macy Conference Center in Briarcliff Manor, New York. My guest now is Starita Ansari. She is President and Chief Change Officer at MSB Philanthropy Advisors. And her topic today is why a strategic organization is key to fundraising success. Starita, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
That's a pleasure. What is a strategic organization?
A strategic organization is an organization that understands that passion is not enough in order to fulfill the mission. It is an organization that looks at inputs, outputs, and outcomes, and makes certain that the day-to-day activities are in line with the strategic direction that fulfills the mission and eventually the vision.
Okay. Inputs, outputs, and outcomes. What are an organization's inputs?
Inputs, as an example, staff, finances, the thinking, the human capital. The output would be, let's say it's a homeless program.
Okay.
So the output would be we fed 100 homeless people.
Okay.
But that's not solving homelessness. That's a service. But the outcome would talk about how many people we have placed, our strategy and our success in eradicating homelessness. That's an outcome.
That sounds like there's going to be quite a process in doing this strategic thinking to become a strategic organization. What is that process like? How does this planning and thought process take place?
First, one of the core values would have to be critical thinking, being able to evaluate trends in the market and trends within the community that you are serving. The other piece is making certain that the people that you hire, particularly from a fundraising perspective, is not purely measured on how many dollars that are raised, but whether or not those individuals understand the mission and can communicate the passion. So what that means is that the people who you hire are strategically aligned with the mission, and that you look beyond the job description, but you look at the talents that people have that can strategically align with the mission, creating a team-based strategic culture that you would have to assess almost at every staff meeting. So staff meetings are not a discussion about activities. Staff meetings are a discussion about the strategic plan.
All right. And we're gonna talk in detail about some of the things you just raised, but how does all this relate to successful fundraising? Because that's your topic, how strategic organizations are key to fundraising success.
Philanthropists want outcomes, not outputs. Philanthropists want a return on investment. Philanthropists do not want organizations that are chasing after grants to keep the doors open. Then, therefore, those organizations end up mission drift. Whether it's individuals, funders, or the government, everyone wants outcomes, which requires people to be very strategic and cost-effective and efficient. That's what strategic planning does. It lets you be cost-effective and efficient in how you're using money to get where you're going.
An earlier guest on the show has been Dr. Robert Penna, who wrote the Nonprofit Outcomes Toolbox. Are you familiar with his work and that book?
I am not.
Okay. Is outcomes assessment or outcomes the attention that outcomes are getting. That's really pretty recent, wouldn't you say, within just the past, I don't know, 3 to 4 years or so, where outcomes have become so much part of the nonprofit dialogue?
Yes. Before, passion and services, you know, doing good and feeling good.
Yeah, for decades, for generations, that was enough, right?
That was enough. And then all of a sudden, the outcomes started creeping in after the Enron situation, and now it's actually part of the playing field. And so our appeals cannot just be appeals that have, you know, shows the single female head of household living in a homeless shelter and pulling on someone's heart. We have to do more than that. People are moving from S not meaning services, but S meaning solutions.
Mm-hmm. And another guest has been Ken Berger, the CEO of Charity Navigator. They're now, and other organizations as well that rank or assess mission effectiveness for nonprofits, paying much greater attention to outcomes than had been in the past. So this is all pretty recent dialogue. Who's responsible for the strategic planning process? Is it the executive director? Is it the board? Is it a combination? Is it the, I don't know, chief fundraiser?
The school of thought and theory that MSB Philanthropy Advisors proposes is that strategic planning should be an inclusive process, and that you create a culture where everyone understands, from the janitor to the chairman of the board, the direction that the institution is going. But most importantly, if someone works for a nonprofit organization that doesn't have a strategic plan, mm-hmm. well, then the VP of institutional advancement or director of development should push the agenda and create the culture, because it's going to be expected of that person when they are soliciting gifts, particularly the major gifts and the planned gifts. People want to know, where is my money going? Not just today, 3, 4, 5 years from now. So everyone should be involved in the strategic direction of the organization.
And then how do we trickle this down to, you mentioned even the custodian. How do we trickle it down? And then also, how do we continue it, this understanding, with people who come to the organization a couple of years after the strategic plan? They couldn't have been a part of it. They weren't part of the organization. How do we continue the trickle down the culture and continue it?
What I've done in my career is that I value everyone, whether the janitor, buildings and ground. Take the time to talk with everyone internally to let them know the direction you're going with your fundraising. You never know who has a relationship somewhere that can help with the plan that you have for raising money. So that's how you let everyone know. Part two of your question, in terms of what happens when someone comes aboard and after the strategic plan has been developed.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in allowing people to bring their talents to the table. Show them the strategic plan and welcome insight. That's one of the things I think is important to our success, is that we have to move to a model in nonprofit sector where evaluation is not punitive, and that everyone can give a feedback to how the ship is moving through the waters. And so a new employee should be able to provide feedback and lend insight.
But how can the plan then accommodate that? I mean, the person is new to the organization. Everyone new, presumably, is going to have their own insights. How does the plan continue forward if it's constantly being altered with new insights from new employees?
Well, the plan is not being altered. The goals and the objectives are the same.
Okay.
What will alter is the additional talent that comes to the table to move the goals and the objectives forward. So everyone, the alumni, the community, the politicians, everyone will know the direction that your institution is moving. And everyone, hopefully, will embrace it and bring what they can to the table.
Okay, and if they're not embracing the mission and the goals, then they probably are not the right fit to be working at the organization. Is that
right? And that's the point I was making before. When people hire individuals purely based upon how much money they've raised, mm-hmm. versus not just the money they've raised, but their passion and their understanding, the mission and the goals and the objectives of whatever, going back to homeless, you know, yeah. eradicating homelessness.
Well, let's talk about the hiring process since we're headed there. How do you ensure that you've got someone who is going to be committed to the mission of the organization? When does that start at the advertising stage, at the interview stage, at the resume screening stage? How do we do this to make sure we're getting the right people who are going to be as committed as everyone else in the organization?
I think it's important at the job placement stage for, and this is going to be challenging.
Okay.
For organizations.
Challenge is good, though. It helps us achieve.
For organizations to be transparent in terms of their core values. That way you know whether or not that what's of interest to that individual is of interest to you.
Okay. So if there's space, I mean, does this belong in a job advertisement? Or it, you really start this kind of transparency at the interview stage when you're talking to people the first time?
It should be on your website. Your mission statement should be on your website. Things that demonstrate your vision should be on the website. And so people can say, okay, my passion is social justice. Mm-hmm. I'm committed to lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender issues, black and brown issues, disability issues, issues of women. I'm committed to making the world a better place for everyone.
And valuing everyone.
And valuing everyone.
As you said, and we're talking about this sort of coming out in the hiring process.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Hi, this is psychic medium Betsy Cohen, host of the show The Power of Intuition. Join me at TalkingAlternative.com Mondays at 11 a.m. Call in for a free psychic reading. Learn how to tune into your intuition to feel better and to create your optimum life. I'm here to guide you and to assist you in creating the life that you deserve. Listen every Monday at 11 a.m. on TalkingAlternative.com.
Hi, I'm Carol Ward from the Body Mind Wellness Program. Listen to my show for ideas and information to help you live a healthier life in body, mind, and spirit. You'll hear from terrific guests who are experts in the areas of health, wellness, and creativity. So join me every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on TalkingAlternative.com. Professionals serving community.
Hi, this is Nancy Tatro from Speak Spin Radio. Speak Spin Radio is an exploration of the world of communication, how it happens and how to make it better, because the quality of your communication has a direct impact on the quality of your life. Tune in Mondays at 2 p.m. on TalkingAlternative.com, where I'll be interviewing experts from business, academia, the arts, and new thought. Join me Mondays at 2 p.m. and get all your communications questions answered on Speak Spin Radio.
This is Tony Martinetti, the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Technology, fundraising, compliance, social media. Small and medium nonprofits have needs in all these areas. My guests are expert in all these areas and more. Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern on Talking Alternative Broadcasting.
TalkingAlternative.com.
For me, I would hire individuals that demonstrate some type of passion and experience in that area. in addition to being a plan giving officer.
Yeah. All right. So clearly, technical expertise is necessary, but your point earlier, it's not sufficient.
Correct.
Dr. Starita Ansari is President and Chief Change Officer at MSB Philanthropy Advisors, and we're talking about how the strategic organization succeeds in fundraising. What about staff meetings you mentioned earlier? It sounds like you're unsatisfied with the typical staff meeting at a nonprofit. All right, she's laughing now. You can laugh out loud. It's okay.
Correct.
Okay. How? Why?
Often people come to staff meetings with a list of things that they've done since the last staff meeting. Mm-hmm. People should come to staff meetings with things that they've done to meet Goal 1, Goal 2. An assessment of how long it took to fulfill Goal 1 and Goal 2. Looking at gap analysis, are we going to meet the deliverable on the time?
Gap. Now on this show we have jargon jail. So gap analysis, that's okay, you didn't know, but you're treading closely to it. What is a gap analysis?
On your strategic plan, there you have a critical path, which are the things that must occur in order for Goals 1 and 2 to happen. Mm-hmm. And let's say action item 3 doesn't occur, then that puts the other goals at risk. Gap analysis is looking at where things are falling through the cracks, where there may be human capital gaps because we haven't hired someone for a position,
okay,
and how that gap is going to impact our ability for the deliverable. And what I'm saying is that staff meetings should be analytical and should focus on what's not working, what is working, and we should celebrate our successes, as opposed to, oh, I met with someone at Ford Foundation, I met with the program officer at Annie Casey, I met this, I met that, I sent out 7 proposals.
Yeah, it's clear now how that sort of really even maybe shallow meeting doesn't promote the work of the, doesn't promote the mission orientation and the goal orientation that we've developed around our strategic plan. It just becomes a list of activities, like you said.
And that's what happens. People go through the strategic planning process, they hire consultants, and the plan sits there. And no one opens the plan to make certain that it's involved in their day-to-day activities.
All right. So no more of that, let's go around the table and tell what we've done in the past 2 weeks or 1 week since the last meeting. Yeah. All right. She's giving the hatchet sign to her, across her neck, I hope it doesn't mean end the interview. No, I'm sure it doesn't. Trends. You mentioned being able to assess trends in the marketplace where the nonprofit exists. How does an organization do that?
One way is if you're in a community, and I'll stick with homeless.
Okay.
And you know there are X number of shelters in Manhattan, get a sense of what they are doing, what they are doing well, maybe opportunities for collaboration. What's your market advantage, what you are doing well that they're not doing well? So when you speak to funders, you can communicate your market advantage. What's the trends in terms of homelessness? What's happening because of the economy? There's an increasing number of single female heads of households that are homeless. What does that mean when a mother and her children are in a shelter? Mm-hmm. That wasn't the case before the economy. So that's a trend that's if you're in the industry, you should be able to communicate the impact that trend has over the past 3 or 4 years on the children in terms of moving around and their ability to perform well in school because they're not in the same school, in terms of nutrition. How does all of that have an impact on the population that you're serving?
And are we talking here about the executive director of the agency, or could this be shared with the board, this type of being out and looking at what's happening in the community? Where I guess I'm asking, where does the responsibility lie for this?
In my opinion, the executive director, CEO, or president is the chief fundraising officer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If that person is not comfortable being the chief fundraising officer, then the vice president for development should equip that person with the tools that he or she needs to rise and fly, which means the development officer or the advancement officer needs to give the president, the CEO, the ED, that data and take the time to train the board on that information. So when they're doing friend raising, they can speak about the value that their program brings to the community.
We have just about a minute and a half left, Starita. How about in performance evaluation? We're looking at employee performance. How does this all work within that?
Strategic planning should be part of everyone's job description.
Oh, really? Okay. Mm-hmm.
I think everyone should be responsible. I think people should be critical thinkers, and fundraisers should strategically decide who they're going to cultivate, why they're going to cultivate that individual, what's the strategy. Look at a question. Which is working? Let's say I'm an annual fund person. Mm-hmm. Which works for my institution? Is it the fiscal year end appeal or the calendar year end appeal? So that's the evaluation piece. And then you take that and you apply that information to your strategic plan on how you're going to move forward.
Okay. Dr. Starita Ansari is President and Chief Change Officer of MSB Philanthropy Advisors. We've been talking about the strategic organization and how important being such is leads to success in fundraising. Starita, thank you very much for being a guest.
Thank you. It was enjoyable.
I'm glad. It was my pleasure. You're listening to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of National Philanthropy Day, hosted by the Association of Fundraising Professionals, Westchester County Chapter.
My previously recorded interview with Starita Ansari. My thanks this week to both Bob Wesolowski and Starita, and also to the Westchester County Chapter of AFP, the Association of Fundraising Professionals, especially their Philanthropy Day organizer, Joe Ferraro. Next week, I'll be back in the studio on West 72nd Street with Paul Geerin from Professional Survey Group. How do you use surveys as a prospect cultivation tool? How do you craft your surveys to learn what others think about your work? I may call that survey satisfaction, or maybe survey simplicity, or, I don't know, serving up surveys. I'm not sure. If you have a suggestion, I'll take it, but you know I love alliterations. Scott Kegler will also be with me. He's our tech contributor and the editor of Nonprofit Technology News. Keep up with what's coming up. Sign up for our insider email alerts on the Facebook page. If you like the show, please like the page. You know you can listen live or archive. To catch us archive, go to nonprofitradio.net, and that will take you to our iTunes page. You'll see about 87 shows, because I've been doing this for about 21 months now. You can listen anywhere on your computer, the device of your choice, at nonprofitradio.net. On Twitter, follow me, or use the show's hashtag, nonprofitradio. Use that hashtag recklessly. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Liebowitz is the line producer. Our show's social media is by Regina Walton of Organic Social Media. And the remote producer of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio is John Federico of The New Rules. I hope you'll be with me next Friday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern, on Talking Alternative Broadcasting, which you'll always find at talkingalternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
How's your game? Want to improve your performance, focus, and motivation? Then you need Aspire Athletic Consulting. Stop second-guessing yourself. Move your game to the next level. Bring back the fun of the sport. Help your child build confidence and self-esteem through sports. Contact Dale at Aspire Athletic Consulting for a free 15-minute power session to get unstuck today. Your greatest athletic performance is just a phone call away at 801-604-0294 or visit aspireconsulting.vpweb. Motivational coaching for athletic excellence. Aspire to greatness.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Looking to meet Mr. or Mrs. Right but still haven't found the one? Want to make your current relationship as fulfilling as possible? Then tune in on Thursdays at 1 p.m. for Love in the Afternoon with Marnie Gallison. As a professional matchmaker, I've seen it all. With distinguished authors, industry gurus, and experts on everything from wine to fashion, join us as we discuss dating, relationships, and more on TalkingAlternative.com.
Are you fed up with talking points rhetoric? Every way you turn, it's left or right spin, ideology, no reality. In fact, it's ideology over intellect. No more. It's time for the truth. Join me, Larry Sharp, a.k.a. The Neosage, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11 Eastern, for the Ivory Tower radio program. In the Ivory Tower, we'll discuss what's important to you, society, politics, business, and family. It's provocative talk for the realist and the skeptic who want to know what's really going on, what does it mean, and what can be done about it. So gain special access to the Ivory Tower and listen to me, Larry Sharp, your Neosage, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11 New York time. Go to ivorytowerradio.com for details. That's ivorytowerradio.com. The Ivory Tower is a great place to visit for both entertainment and education. Listen in, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11. It will make you smarter.
TalkingAlternative.com.